It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medication to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. Science is on the verge of a breakthrough in aging research that promises to prolong a healthy lifespan and delay the onset of age-related degenerative diseases. We'll be discussing these breakthroughs today with Dr. Eric Rogers. He's a PhD assistant professor at the MDI Biological Laboratory, and he studies the molecular mechanisms underlying aging at the MDI Biolab in Bar Harbor. And the goal of the research is to identify therapies to extend lifespan in humans, a healthy lifespan. We don't just want you living longer. We want you having quality years as well. A little biography on Dr. Rogers. He uses the small roundworm to understand the genetic changes that occur under conditions that extend lifespan, such as dietary restriction, genetic variations, and environmental conditions that result in lifespan extension are also associated with the delay of the onset of age-related diseases. These include diabetes, cancer, and neurodegeneration. A little bit about the laboratory, too, in case he's been on the show before and we've talked about this, but the MDI Biological Laboratory in Bar Harbor is pioneering new approaches to regenerative medicine focused on developing drugs that slow age-related degenerative diseases and activate our natural ability to heal. The institution's unique approach has identified potential therapies that could revolutionize the treatment of heart disease, muscular dystrophy, nerve damage, and more. So if you want to know more about this great group, log on to MDIBL.org. So, Dr. Rogers, thank you so much for joining me today.
Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you back. You were on Senior Talk, and we discussed breakthroughs that are now occurring in aging research. If anybody listening would like to hear that show again, log on to WVOMFM.com, and you can hear it in podcast form. So we'll be talking today about interventions that can prolong lifespan and delay the onset of age-related degenerative diseases, pharmaceutical interventions, and those lifestyle interventions like the one I keep focusing on is the restricted calories because I'm well known for my love of snacks. So let's talk about this. What is the maximum human lifespan that you think can be extended? How long are you trying to get us to live?
You will get different answers depending on who you ask. Nobody actually knows. Some have offered an estimate that our natural extension, or the furthest we could really extend median or average human lifespan, would be to around 120. Now, we already have some examples of people who've lived that long or even a little past. But some do believe that would be the max, and that what we could do is find ways to stay healthy until reaching that age. Others do believe that there is no inherent limit.
So people could theoretically live to be 150, 175 maybe?
It's possible.
A lot of moral and ethical and political implications to doing that. But for the sake of argument, this is what we're working on, is to get people to live, and if not longer, then healthier as they age. So if they're 90, they're still feeling 60.
The goal of medical research really isn't to geared toward extending human lifespan as much as extending the healthy period of life. Just like we have procedures now to help with age-related maladies such as cancer, sometimes you might go in and get a cancer removed. If we could do something that might prevent that cancer from ever occurring, I don't think that would be considered unnatural as much as it would just be part of a healthy lifestyle.
And when you think about it, we've been doing this really for years. The life expectancy 100 years ago was much less than it is now because of medical intervention and the more that we know about lifestyle and changes that we make in ourselves and environmental changes. So this is just more of the same going further.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the pharmaceutical interventions. There's a drug that you're pretty fond of. Let's talk about that. Metformin.
Yep. Metformin is a commonly used for type 2 diabetes. It's a way of reducing the sugar that gets released from the liver, which in people with diabetes can be very high. And so it brings that back down to a healthier level. And in so doing, part of it, the way that it works is it restores the ability of other cells in your body to be sensitive to insulin.
And diabetes is one of the diseases that really rapidly ages you. Is that right? If you have diabetes, your body really takes a hit.
It's really true, yes, and it's true of many different age-related conditions.
So this drug, metformin, has been FDA-approved. I see ads for it on TV. It's everywhere. But you're looking at using it for a different reason, more than just diabetes. Is that what's happening?
Yes, absolutely. What all of the evidence right now indicates that it's able to extend a healthful lifespan in almost every species that it's been tested in. And there's already observational evidence in humans that that it can help prevent or ameliorate heart disease, reduce incidence of cancer, and even neurodegenerative conditions. So there is a lot of hope that this kind of a medication would prevent the snowballing effect of one condition sort of worsening overall health status and leading to the next condition and the next and the next.
In the study that was found to be true in, people taking the drug, were they taking it because they had diabetes?
Yes.
And so if they were found to have less other health problems, is that because of the drug or is it because their diabetes was better controlled and so they're naturally not going to have some of the other problems?
Right. Well, the interesting thing is that some of the studies were showing that in the control counterparts to the diabetics taking the drug, so people who don't have diabetes and aren't taking the drug, that the people with diabetes taking the drug in some instances were actually living longer. Again, the real hope is and the real interest comes from the fact that there were also improvements in just overall health. The interest is in trying to utilize the drug to improve quality of life.
And this is a very inexpensive drug, so we're not talking about something that is hundreds of dollars a pill.
Exactly. It's been around for over 50 years.
So what's the next step? Is it currently being used this way, or do you have to go through a lot of trials and FDA approval to shift gears on what this can be used for and prescribed for people?
Well, there is a TAME trial, something called a TAME trial, which I'm trying to...
The Targeting Aging with Metformin study.
Yes, Targeting Aging with Metformin. This is a study. It's already been FDA approved. Right now, investigators are trying to raise the revenue required to do the study, but it would involve about 3,000 people between the ages of 65 and 79. And what it would do is to look at what the FDA would call indications. So rather than being for aging, it would be, okay, how does it help prevent onset of type 2 diabetes? How does it help ameliorate neurodegenerative conditions or help prevent cancer, that sort of thing?
And dementia. I see dementia is
which
is something everyone is terrified of, and rightly so. And this has been used even longer. The ingredients, the basis for this drug, has been used even longer than it was an actual drug, because in the research it was plant form and was used as an herbal remedy for centuries. So this is really, it's very hopeful that this could be turned into something that would benefit all of us. Since this trial has been approved, what's the next steps? How long before doctors are giving out this pill and we're all aging into our healthy golden years?
Right. Well, like I said, they're still trying to raise the money for the study. But in the meantime, there are a lot of people who are on the drug, not just for type 2 diabetes, but for prediabetes. So the doctor diagnoses you as prediabetic. This is a medication that you are likely to be put on.
Is this a medication that's pretty much everyone can take? Are there specific side effects that someone should be leery of?
It's generally very well tolerated. There can be some gastrointestinal distress, but unless you've got severe kidney or liver problems, this is something that is remarkably well tolerated.
Are there other drugs in the works that would help do the same thing, to help people live longer, healthier lives?
Absolutely. They don't all function exactly the same way. We have a lot of interest in another drug called rapamycin, and that is a drug that has been used to help prevent rejection of transplanted organs. So it has an immune suppressive effect. We've seen that this extends lifespan and all the species that it's been tested in.
If it has an immune suppressive effect, is that dangerous? Are you more susceptible for other diseases or infections?
Well, it's very interesting. That is a concern. It is very certainly it's an immunosuppressant. A recent study, though, was done where elderly people were put onto this drug for just a period of a few weeks. And then their responses to immunization and their annual flu vaccination were tested. And what they found is it almost seemed to reset immune function to that of a younger person. You hear immune suppressant, you think, well, that's bad. I need to be able to fight off a cold or, some kind of infection. That's absolutely true. But what if there was something that was able to, kind of hit a reset button in your immune system, and you only took it for a little while, or maybe periodically once a year or something, and it could have a real rejuvenating effect? That would be quite remarkable, and right now that's kind of the way things are looking.
And that would reduce the long-term side effects if you only took it briefly.
Exactly.
When we come back, we will talk more about this and ways to keep you living longer and healthier. There's also some classes coming up that you might be interested in, so we will talk about that. If you'd like to hear this show again, log on to WVOMFM.com and listen to it in podcast form. And you can also listen to the prior show that we did with Dr. Rogers at that place as well. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk, Dr. Eric Rogers, and keeping you healthier, longer, and living longer. So there's a lecture series that you've guaranteed is for the lay population. It's called Live Longer, Live Better. So talk to me about that. What's happening? I know it's in August.
Right. This is a part of a teaching course for bringing in other investigators who are new to the field of aging. So much of that is sort of hardcore science, and probably not too many people would be interested in all of the details of that. But as part of this, we're having a series of afternoon lectures, and some of those are going to be very readily available to a lay audience and without too much jargon.
So that everybody can understand them and maybe understand what you're doing in more of a regular person's vocabulary.
Exactly.
Because this can get really intense really fast, and I can attest to that having done the research. So we're looking at – this is happening at the lab.
Correct.
And that's in Bar Harbor. And to learn more, you can log on to mdibl.org/events. Monday, August 6th is Why Reversing Aging is Easier Than Reversing Baldness. Thursday, August 9th is Aging and Cancer, Rival Demons. And Friday, August 10th, Finding Rejuvenating Interventions, Immunity and Stem Cells. So if you're interested in those, log on to mdibl.org and find out more. Very world-renowned scientists will be giving these lectures. Let's talk about your specific work with the roundworms. And you are not currently the metformin and the other drugs. You're not doing that specifically. You're maybe using components of that.
Right. We might investigate the efficacy of those compounds, but not in humans. We're not conducting clinical research. I've been asked before if I had clinical studies going, and I have to tell people you can only be involved in my clinical study if you're a millimeter long roundworm and you live in the soil. What's phenomenal is that nature doesn't waste the mechanisms that work and the things that these therapeutics that are coming down to slow aging, they work across different species. And so that's how we're able to learn so much about exactly what they're doing.
So are the roundworms very like humans in their DNA and makeup?
They share about 40% of their genes. But like I say, you know, nature doesn't waste anything. And a lot of the processes at the cellular level are preserved from a single cell baker's yeast all the way up to a human being. And that's what we exploit to try to understand how nature works.
So what do you do to these worms to find out what makes them live longer or makes them live healthier?
Well, the fantastic thing about these little roundworms is they, you know, unlike us, we live for decades, or unlike a laboratory mouse, which lives for a few years, their entire life cycle is 2 to 3 weeks. And so we can see them grow up in 3 to 4 days, and we can see them grow old literally in 2 weeks. And so we see an animal go from being vibrant and youthful in appearance to an animal that can't move very well and is beginning to show signs of tissue degeneration. But all of that is so super sped up in this animal that when we do an intervention, like we change a gene's activity a little bit or we use a drug, we find out very fast what the consequences and potential benefits are.
So you're really able to see the benefits of your work almost immediately.
Exactly.
Which you wouldn't get in any other species.
No.
It takes time.
Exactly. That's right. That's right.
So what are you doing to them? I know that there's these lifestyle changes, and I know that you're going to start talking about exercise because every doctor and scientist does. But there's calorie restriction, dietary restrictions, and I can't wait to hear more about that. And then increased exercise, and then heat, saunas, baths. So let's start with the lifestyle changes. Let's start with exercise.
So with exercise, actually, some of the therapeutics that we're talking about might be stimulating aspects of either dietary restriction or exercise. And when you understand that, I think it makes those interventions that we've known just from common sense for many decades are supposed to be good. When you understand, I guess for me personally, understanding at the molecular level how these things are actually working to improve health, it makes it that much more impressive to me how much sway we have over our own genes and how they talk.
When we come back, we will talk more about the exercise component, and we'll also discuss the dietary restriction and the heat, as in hot baths. So stay with us. We will be right back right after this. Hi, you were back. So given that exercise is a key component, I asked during the break how you get worms to exercise, and you gave me a great answer.
That's right. So normally these things will swim through the dirt, but if you put them in liquid, they try to gain footing, so to speak, even though they don't have feet, and they thrash. They sort of thrash their bodies back and forth, and it's a very rapid motion that they wouldn't normally do, but it does sort of force them into a high state of physical activity.
So you can see the effects of that on health and lifespan. Dietary restriction. I'm seeing some are reducing caloric intake by 40%. Oh. So you can live longer, but honestly, why would you want to? But by reducing calories that much.
That's just one way. Okay. There are other ways to signal to the body that you're in an energy deficit without actually being in a severe energy deficit. In fact, restricting protein can be a big one. Just to put a fine point on it, you can literally restrict one essential amino acid from the diet, just one. And that will be enough to get the benefits of a dietary restriction.
How do we know which amino acid that is?
So there's only a few essential ones and that we can't make ourselves. And one of them is methionine. And that amino acid is required at the beginning of every protein that you make, that your cells in your body make. And so just by restricting that one, you can essentially trick the system into thinking that you are low on the building blocks you need to synthesize. And so it must be a condition in which all of your body's tissues must rev up their ability to withstand.
So more exercise, less calories. And we're not advocating people go off and do this on their own.
Everybody should talk to their doctor, obviously.
Right. Talk to your doctor. Don't start slashing your calories by 40% and doing high levels of exercise.
A lot of people are not doing that extreme cutting of calories. Some people are doing every other day fasting or fasting once every 2 weeks. There are now diets out there that simulate a fasting state, believe it or not. And so I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities where people won't have to chronically starve themselves. There are some people who are doing that, but it's a very difficult lifestyle and it comes with its own drawbacks. So it'd be much better to just get the body to evoke those responses rather than actually being under that condition 24/7.
And the last one is hot baths, steam baths, saunas. How does heat work?
So one of the things that we see with animals is that if you put them under a short-term acute form of stress that they can fully recover from, that oftentimes that has its own health benefits. And so we can stick our little nemata, our little worms, into an incubator that's kind of warm for them for maybe a half hour or a couple hours, pull them out, they all fully recover. And as long as they all fully recover and there wasn't any permanent damage, these animals actually end up living longer and they are much hardier. They're more resistant to stress, less prone to disease. And so we might imagine that there's something analogous in humans. Now, we're warm-blooded, so our body temperature shouldn't change that much. But there's some anecdotal evidence that people who frequent steam rooms or jacuzzi tubs, they might be getting a little of that heat shock response just through their skin.
We may be in the weeds here, but is it warm heat, like moist heat, or dry heat, or does it matter?
It's really about getting the temperature up in those cells so they receive a little bit of a shock. Again, I don't want anyone to go out and boil themselves.
No.
But the idea is maybe anecdotally there is something there. We don't know for sure 100% in humans, but there's a lot of evidence from all the animals, different kinds of animals people study that this is something that is conserved and it runs into these aging pathways that we're studying.
Well, even if not taken to the level that you're taking it as a scientist, anybody can benefit from eating a healthier diet, which probably would mean a little bit of a reduction in calories. You know, oranges have less calories than donuts. Exercise, and who doesn't love a hot bath? Dr. Rogers, thank you so much for being here again. You're a lovely guest and great information. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Thanks so much for listening.